Our text this morning, as we're making our way through Luke, is chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. Lots of imagery today, and David had us take deep breaths, and Sarah and Sunlight sang about the clouds, and I'd like you to feel the sounds of around the Sea of Galilee, the fishing, the nets, all that sort of stuff. As we look at, I want us to live into this text today. This text, if you'll bring it up, yeah, thanks. One day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, and this is a word that means, again, means garden, Aseret is riches, garden of riches. Also the same name for the Sea of Galilee. With the people crowding around him and listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. And then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he'd finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." And Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets." And when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, for I'm a sinful man. I'm a mere mortal." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. And Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on you will catch men." And so they pulled their boats up on shore and left everything and followed him. May God add his blessing to this reading of his word. And I really would like you to listen to this sermon with your heart and your imagination. And as I say, to smell the smells and sense the sights up there around the Sea of Galilee, and to realize this isn't about Peter as much as it is about you. And I'd like you to picture yourself in the boat with Jesus. So if you can do that, work hard with me to do that. Before we get there, let me just say that we don't know a lot about how well Peter knew Jesus before this time. Peter grew up in Capernaum, which is on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus grew up in Nazareth, and they must have been not very far apart, and they must have gotten to know each other, perhaps. At any rate, near the end of chapter 4, the previous chapter, when Jesus finishes speaking in Capernaum in the synagogue, he goes to Simon's house, and there he finds Simon's mother-in-law, who's ill, and he heals her. So they must have known each other well enough for Jesus to come to his house. And Jesus spent some time there. And then Peter noticed that Jesus, there are lots of crowds gathering and people bringing persons who were ill, and Jesus healed them. And so Peter had a pretty good awareness of who Jesus is, as do you and I. Well enough we know Jesus to invite him to our home to come and live in the home of our lives, and then wondering what's next for that. So, and for some reason, Luke refers to this body of water, the Sea of Galilee, as the Lake Gennesaret, the lake on the plain of riches, the garden of riches. Why do you suppose, in this very rare instance, does he refer to it as the Gennesaret? I wonder, do you suppose it's because whenever God is ready to push you or me out into the depth, out into a new experience, out into the unknown, the thing that we've known becomes awfully comfortable and secure and wonderful and like a plane of riches, better than we ever thought it was before, because the known is preferred to the unknown. Anybody here like that? And so Luke maybe has a play on words, this plane of riches that Peter is being pushed further away from. I wonder if somebody's there this morning. The warm security of the present is much preferred to the uncertainty of the unknown. And you might even be saying, Jesus, what I know here and now is like a garden of riches compared to what I don't know, to where you want me to go, to the unknown. Are you sure this is for me? And then it says that as the crowds grew, there was no place left to stand. And so Jesus got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, or for today's sermon, the one belonging to you. And so you are there in the boat, and Jesus gets in the boat with you, and he sits down, as a rabbi does, to teach. And you, with the crowd, are enthralled by his teaching. What does he teach? Perhaps a version of the Beatitudes. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are, and he goes on through the Beatitudes. Or he may say, don't worry about anything. Consider the lilies of the field, how God clothes them in great beauty. Or don't judge. Or you've heard it said of old, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And you, like the crowd, are taken in by what Jesus is saying and say, what a truly remarkable man. Maybe he is the chosen one, the Messiah, the one we've been waiting for and hoping for. And then when he finishes speaking to the crowd, he turns to you and says, John or Sarah or whomever, put out into the deep waters and let down the nets. And you have a sense that this isn't so much about fishing as it is about the next step in your life. And you and Jesus together in the boat, put out into the deep. What might that mean for you today? To put out into the deep. To let down your nets. To put out beyond who you are. Beyond yourself. To a deeper place. And you may well push back, just as Peter did. Here's what Peter said. But Master, we've worked all night and haven't caught anything. And in your own subtle or not so subtle way, you may say to Jesus, but Jesus, look, you know a lot about teaching God's ways. I give you that. But I know about fishing and I know about my life. And it's my life. And I can tell you, I've been out there all night fishing and didn't catch anything. So what you're asking me to do is pointless. I don't want to do it. Or maybe you're saying something like, Jesus, you know about God and life and teaching in general, but my situation is unique and I'm stretched as far as I can be stretched. After all, I worked all night and I'm exhausted. So please don't ask me to do one more thing. Or maybe you're saying, Jesus, you know about spiritual things, but I live in the real world and I have a pretty good handle on things and I know pretty well what works and what doesn't. So you stick to your thing and I'll stick to mine. Or finally, you might say, Jesus, this is who I am and I'm just tired. And I've been working all the night and I can't catch anything. Leave me alone. But what would you say? What do you say when Jesus pushes you a little bit? Peter relented and he said, but because you say so, I'll do it. And so you and Jesus together, the two of you, push out into the deep waters. What is that for you today? I think for Peter it was trust. Deeper trust. He knew fishing. He was as good as any of the fishermen in the area. His partners were James and John. And yet Jesus was saying, look, I know you know about fishing, but trust me on this. And he might be saying something like what's in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him. And he will make your path straight. But don't let me put words in your mouth. What would you be saying? You and Jesus there in the boat. Jesus looks at you with the strength of his eyes and says, push out a little deeper into the water. Well, let's read further. The text says that Simon did what he said. He lets down the nets and he catches more fish than his nets or his boats can hold. And then he sees it, that he's in the very presence of God, Jesus, the divine one, and he's astonished. That's it, isn't it? what Jesus was getting at. It wasn't about fish. It was about this relationship that he could trust Jesus for his very life. He was indeed God, the Son of God, God himself. And he knew life was different because he had encountered the living God. And he was astonished. You've had those moments of astonishment. I think Alice and JD and the others had it when the well water started coming. Sometimes, I'll tell you the truth, when I drive on this campus, I am in awe. I come up over the hill on this entrance over here, and I break out in quiet singing, "Oh Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder," and I look at the buildings, the chapel, all the things, the grounds, and I think, God, this is pushing us out way beyond what anybody ever thought 16, 17 years ago. When you said to Trinity, push out into the deep, they had no idea it would be 67 acres of deepness. And here we are. Or an evening after dark, sometimes instead of leaving directly, I'll drive over and park out in front of this church and look up at the welcoming Christ. And I feel Jesus inviting me and everyone here unto himself. And I'm overwhelmed with awe. Or when I see a Scott Gobranson. Scott, forgive me for picking you out. But I remember when I first met you and as you talked to me, you had almost no, very little, if any, awareness of the whole Christian thing. You came to Alpha. You met your beautiful bride. You have a beautiful child. You introduced to us here at Trinity Financial Peace University, from which hundreds of people have found enormous economic freedom. And I stand back in awe and I could tell you more and more and more stories. And every time I walk with somebody into the new chapel and they are filled with awe, I'm amazed. That's what God has been asking Trinity to do. What about you? Jesus keeps doing that with us. These moments of awe. And while there are moments of awe, there are also moments of fear. Can we really do this? I'm not sure what the unknown means. God, I trust you, but the water's deep and it doesn't make any sense. Are you sure that's what you want us to do? And when I think of the crazy adventure this church has been on, I think, wow, if we really knew, would we have? And we did. But you've known what it's like to be afraid to follow him. But here are these words that I missed every time I read it until one of you in my Wednesday morning group pointed it out to me. Jesus said to Peter, did you catch it? He says to Peter, don't be afraid. Peter's astonished at the catch. And I don't know why Jesus said, don't be afraid. But that's what he said. And that's what I need to hear sometimes. And that's what you need to hear sometimes. What do the phrases from Jesus mean for us today? Push out into the deep. What's that mean for you? Let down your nets. Don't be afraid. What's he saying to you and why? May I suggest two or three possibilities in addition to what you're feeling? I think one thing is that you and I see the sacred in the ordinary. That you and I see the sacred in the ordinary. That's what happened for Peter. Fishing is what he did, and it was in the doing of what he ordinarily did that he experienced Jesus in an awesome way. Don't underestimate that. I have long said that normal is underrated and ordinary is underrated. I've learned some of that here. When I came into the ministry, I thought everything had to be so incredibly spiritual and all this stuff. And here I've learned that infrastructure and systems are so incredibly valuable. Without them, all of this falls apart. It's the ordinary. Teilhard de Chardin says this, do not forget that the value and interest of life is not so much to do conspicuous things as to do ordinary things with the perception of their enormous value. To do ordinary things with the perception of their enormous value. I see it every day when I come to church, mothers and fathers, young mothers, sometimes grandparents, each morning bringing their kids to the preschool here, They have this same routine of getting out of the car, opening the back door, undoing the car seats, getting two or three kids out, putting one or two in a stroller, making their way up here, going and stopping at the aquarium, going to their classroom, and then they repeat it all the way back at noon. And I wonder if these young moms, I don't wonder, I know, if they ever wonder, is this what life is really all about? And I want to say to you as strongly as I can, it's in that ordinary stuff that God is present. And feel the awe of that. The routine of fixing supper, changing diapers, putting kids to bed, negotiating bedtime. All of those unglamorous things, the violin lessons, the soccer practice, so ordinary, but they provide the stability, the continuity, the sacred, ordinary stuff. And see the enormous value of God's presence in that. So I say to you, parents, nothing more important in the world than what you do day in and day out, the sacred, ordinary, the routines. That's your boat for now. Jesus is in the boat with you. Or maybe it's the openness to God in ordinary ways where he comes. 2 weeks ago after our Wednesday morning Bible study, two persons left the Bible study, went to Starbucks for a quiet cup of coffee, and a woman from Syria came in. They found out she was from Syria. They must have caught each other's eye. She must have found in them a welcoming presence, which may not always be the case in our society at this time. And an hour and a half later, they finished their cup of coffee and their conversation. But that was a moment of God. Or another couple who left the Bible study and went to visit Margaret Jones, who's in hospice. DJ gave me a wonderful image. I should let him say it, but I'm afraid he would go on and on. No, I'm just kidding you, DJ. But he could say it better than I. But he said he saw something. You know, he works with cameras and lenses, and he does this wonderful stuff. And he said, you know, sometimes you can get the thing you're focusing on too close, and you can't either see it or the thing far away. And somehow by something happening in life, it changes it so that you step back and you can see with clarity. Maybe that's what Peter had. Maybe that's what sometimes happens in life when you step back and you say, wow, what I see now what really matters in life. God calling us out of ourselves, pushing us out into the deep. Or is God calling you to a new chapter, a new arena, a new challenge? One of the wonderful stories in Jan and my life is when Jan was 7, her mom was ill. And Jan, like any 7-year-old or 27 or 77, sort of bargained with God. Jesus, if you help mom get well, I'll give you my life. And her mom got well and she said, oh my word, I've got to give you my life. And I'll be anything you want. I'll be a missionary to Africa. And that was the most difficult possible thing Jan could imagine. And so then she thought she was had. And then she had a pastor who lovingly said, well, Jan, you don't have to be a missionary to Africa to follow God. You can be a wonderful teacher, which are, many of your gifts are so that way. But here's the sweet irony. This summer, Jan's going with me to Africa to kind of come full circle to maybe fulfill that vision. It's a stretch for Jan. I think she would tell you that. Or retirement, or job change, or maybe to keep doing what you're doing and seeing God there. Maybe you know the name Paul Farmer. Do you know him? He's been on the news a lot with the thing in Haiti. He's been a doctor who, for the last 2 decades, has saved hundreds of thousands of lives in Haiti with his vaccinations, his work with TB, and his book, Mountains Beyond Mountains, a Harvard MD. He got that while going to Haiti on the weekends. Amazing man doing amazing things, but he needed funding. And he met a man, I think his name is Ted White, a real estate developer in the Boston area. And they got connected, and Ted White gave Paul and his organization maybe $1 million or more. And without Ted, Paul couldn't have done what he did. And one moment when Ted was thinking, I feel like I'm not really doing anything. I wonder if I should leave my work and come help you, Paul. Paul said, oh, no, don't do that. I can't do my work without your funding. Which is sort of a backdoor way of me saying to you, thank you for your giving, which helps Trinity do all that it does. Well, there may be another level of pushing out into the depths. Maybe as we look at our theme for this year of traveling light, maybe the thing that God is asking you to do to let down your nets is to let go of some emotional stress, some anger. And that can't be rushed. It needs to take some time. Or letting down some stress or some bad habits, or to drop weight. Now, I haven't said a lot about weight, but Jen and I were at a conference recently for clergy, pre-retirement, if you're 10 years out or so. And so one of the topics was wellness. And they showed a graphic that just sort of shocked Jen and me and all the people in the room. It was just this amazing thing of how overweightness has taken over us in this country over the last years. So these graphs are from 1985 to 2008. I don't know if you can read the things at the bottom, but DJ's made it so they'll appear run right after that. Watch what's happened, how this wave has kept over. That's in 1985. These are trends. And see, the year changes. And the obesity rates get heavier and heavier. And now Florida. And then it keeps going. I guess what I'm trying to say is, if this is an issue for any of us here, it's to be expected, because look what's happening. It's a massive, massive problem and difficulty. And I know this is one of the hardest things ever possibly to do. And my daughter keeps saying, well, Dad, it's good for you to say that you just happen to have lost a little bit of weight, so now you're rubbing it in on everybody. That's not what I'm trying to do. I just want you all to be around a long, long time. But you can see what's happened. So what is God asking you to do today when he says push out into the boat? And if you're scared to do it, I want to leave you with a story from our own family. And I apologize in advance for once again telling about our daughter, but she called us yesterday. And this is such a perfect story for the end of this sermon. Our daughter, Siobhan, who most of you know, is mainly in a wheelchair. She really can't walk because of a balance problem. And she lives in Virginia, and they've gotten more snow than we can imagine. A couple of feet, no school all last week. And then more snow this past weekend. And so Eric, they live on a hill, and Eric wanted to go out and take the kids sled riding, but Siobhan said neither of the kids wanted to go. And I have a feeling that part of the reason that Ethan didn't want to go is because when I was up there, he and I went sled riding and we crashed at the bottom. And he said, I'm not going to get in there again. But Siobhan said, okay, I'll go. And Jan gasped on the phone, and we both sort of gasped. You went down the hill. You can't walk. You went down the hill. She said, it was a ball. I got soaked. I said, why did you get soaked? She said, because when you go down, you have to also come back up. And Eric had a hard time getting me back up the hill. He put the thing around his body, and pulled up the hill. And then he had to get John, the neighbor, to come over, and both of them had to pull me up the hill. But she loved it. If my daughter, who can't walk on solid, dry ground without assistance, can get in a doggone sled to go down the hill, you can launch out. You can go out into the deep, wherever it might be. Would you pray with me? God, we thank you for this story. Not just the story, but for this word of God to us. Wherever we might be, help us to see Jesus there in the boat with us and to hear him say, don't be afraid. Do this. I'll be with you all the way. It's in his name we pray. Amen.